Welcome to Coast AM. My name is Richard Serrett, and we're coming to you live from Coast's Toronto affiliate, Talk Radio AM 640. A belated happy Valentine's Day to you and the ones you hold dear. Here in Toronto tonight, we hosted the 65th annual NBA All-Star Game, and we put on quite a show, I have to say. You know, I have to be honest here. I'm not a basketball fan, but I was impressed. I caught the game. The players, coaches, and fans all seemed to have a really, really good time. Now, I'm a hockey fan, and one of the things I've noticed over the years is that whether it's the All-Star game or just the regular schedule, the NHL coaches and the players, they all look like they've just attended a funeral. Just, you know, a note, just lighten up. I know it's cold up here, but at least try and look like you're having a good time. We had a very Canadian-style Valentine's Day celebration. It has been here in Toronto about minus 20 Celsius for the last couple of days. And the furnace up at the Serrett household in Thornhill has not been able to keep up with the cold. So we had the fireplace on and we had space heaters going. We had the furnace guy over at the house today. It has been cold. The mighty Aphrodite went to bed in her fur coat. So for Valentine's Day today, I brought her a bouquet of flowers and a fire log. that's a Canadian-style Valentine's Day. All right. United States, of course, mourning the passing of U.S. Supreme Court Justice Scalia. And this is interesting. The Washington Post reporting that Scalia was pronounced dead of natural causes at a hunting lodge in Texas, despite the fact that his body was not seen, and perhaps even more of a head-scratcher, no autopsy requested. This is kind of disturbing, actually. Anyway, someone tweeted me this afternoon and wrote, "What a strange and dark time we are living in." That's the truth. All right, Zika, the mosquito-borne virus that's been, it's been around, we've known about it since the 1940s, but most of us just recently heard about it in the news. A recent outbreak in Brazil, and according to the World Health Organization, the Zika virus may be responsible for about 4,000 cases of microcephaly. This is a birth defect characterized by abnormally small heads in infants and severe brain impairment. And millions of Brazilian women have been warned, or it's been suggested to them, they not get pregnant for the next several years, which could cause essentially a lost generation. My guest in the final 2 hours of the program is a medical investigative journalist and a Pulitzer Prize nominee. And he says there is no scientific evidence that microcephaly is caused by the Zika virus. He says it's part of a depopulation agenda. John Rappaport of No More Fake News will be here in hours 3 and 4 to discuss in the first 2 hours of the program. I hope my American listeners on Coast to Coast will indulge me. We're going to talk about the Bank of Canada, Canada's central bank. You have your Federal Reserve. We have the Bank of Canada. There's a very important case before the federal courts here in Canada, and surprise, surprise, it's largely being ignored by the mainstream media. In Canada, this Bank of Canada was created by an act of parliament. And its raison d'etre, its reason for existence, was to lend money interest-free. That's right, interest-free to the federal, provincial, and municipal governments in this country. Again, zero interest. This is how Canada paid for the war effort during the Second World War. It's how we paid for one of the most important infrastructure projects in our history, the St. Lawrence Seaway. It's how we paid for universal health care. Again, interest-free from the Bank of Canada. Then, in the early to mid-1970s, something changed. The federal government here in Canada stopped borrowing interest-free money from the Bank of Canada, and instead we went to the international money market. We started borrowing from international lenders and paying interest. Now today, in 2016, the federal debt here in Canada is about $600 billion. And most of that, probably about 80-90% of that, is compound interest from the loans from international lenders. Why is this happening? When we have the Bank of Canada Act. My guest in the first 2 hours of Coast to Coast is a constitutional lawyer who's alleging a conspiracy on the part of the Bank of Canada and various finance ministers and, no less, the Queen of England. This is not just a Canadian story. It has serious implications for countries around the world. Again, in the United States, we have the Federal Reserve Bank. The various countries in Europe have their central banks. As this court case gets to the very core of how our economies are being controlled, perhaps at the very top. Anyway, Canadian constitutional lawyer Rocco Galati is standing by. We are indeed living in strange and dark times. It's later than we think. It's time to go deep. Are you ready to take the plunge? My name is Richard Serrett. This is the most relevant radio program on the planet right now. It's Coast to Coast AM. Stay with us. Welcome back to Coast AM. Richard Serrett coming to you from Coast Toronto Affiliate Talk Radio AM 640. Rocco Galati is an Italian-born Canadian lawyer who specializes in cases involving constitutional law and also suspects of terrorism. Galati was born in Calabria, Italy, and his family immigrated to Canada in 1965. He graduated from McGill University in 1984 with a Bachelor of Arts and then graduated from Osgoode Hall Law School in 1987. He's currently pursuing a case against the Canadian government to restore the original intended use of the Bank of Canada as a lender to the government. Rocco Galati, welcome to Coast AM. How are you?
Good morning, Richard. I'm a bit tired. It's 1 o'clock.
Well, I appreciate your time because this is an important case, and I want our American listeners, Canadian listeners, to understand the importance here. Now, if you could just take a few moments to explain what the Bank of Canada is as it relates, for example, to the Federal Reserve Bank in the United States, the various central banks of Europe.
Well, it serves the same function as the other central banks with a huge difference, though. The Bank of Canada, Canada's the only Western democracy in Europe or North America that has a public central bank. That is, the bank is owned by the public through the Minister of Finance and reports, and it's responsible for reporting to Parliament. The other central banks, such as the Federal Reserve, the Bank of England, the Bank of Italy, and so forth, are private banks. Although they have the aura and, most people think they're public banks, they're not. They're private banks. So insofar as Canada is concerned, our public bank has been drawn into the dictates of private bankers, essentially, who are dictating to our public bank not only interest rate policy, but how it's to function and really turn on its head the reason it was set up in the first place, which was to get us out of depression and to extend low interest and interest-free loans to the governments for human infrastructure projects such as hospitals, education, roads, and other government infrastructure.
So at a certain point, the Bank of Canada was established. In fact, it was nationalized by Prime Minister William Lyon Mackenzie King.
In 1937.
So it was to lend, I mentioned this in the preamble, it was to lend money to the various levels of government here, the federal government, the provincial government, the municipal governments, at essentially zero interest. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct, yeah. And it worked for a long time. It worked well. Canada far outperformed the other countries in terms of fiscal policies and economic output from 34 to 74. And then in 1974, Prime Minister Pierre Elliott Trudeau was convinced to join what they call the Bank of International Settlements over in Basel, Switzerland, which was the bank that was responsible for the post-Marshall Plan reconstruction of Europe, which was the Committee of Central Banks. He later indicated that he regretted having made that decision because he didn't really know enough about economics when he made it, because he realized that because Pierre Trudeau was a nationalist, if you recall, who did not want the clutches of foreign ownership in Canada. For instance, he methodically got foreign ownership of Canada economically under 50% from American ownership during his tenure as prime minister. So he regretted his decision because he didn't understand the impact being the private actors, private bankers are making decisions that have nothing to do with your country, that only serve the interests of their private profit-making, banking operations, yet they determine your banking policy, which in turn determines your economic policy, which in turn takes away your sovereignty in terms of economic activity and output and influence.
So, around 1974, instead of the federal government here in Canada, the provincial governments, municipal governments, borrowing interest-free money from the Bank of Canada, which is owned by the people of Canada, we start to borrow from international bankers. You mentioned the Bank of International Settlements, which is essentially the central bank of all central banks. But who owns the International Bank of Settlements?
Well, it's just a conglomerate of all the central banks, which in turn, are fed into it by the private central banks of the world, primarily Europe and United States, and also Canada. The other thing too is we also borrow from domestic banks too. So the irony there is that the banks, those private banks, do get their money from the Bank of Canada, and next to zero interest rates right now, I think the prime rate the Bank of Canada is 0.5%, and they in turn lend it to the government in anywhere between 3.5% and 4%. So since 1974, we have paid approximately 1.7 or 8 trillion dollars in interest alone. 1.7 trillion dollars in interest, which, just to put it in perspective, our annual budget is approximately anywhere from 230 to 240 a year. So even if you round it off to a quarter trillion dollars, you're talking about 7 years of running the country. That's a lot of money in a
To say the
40-year
least,
period.
to say the least. Okay, so you're a constitutional lawyer.
Right.
Now, what is the actual details of the case here? First of all, who hired you, and where is this case being tried?
Well, my clients are two individuals. It's being tried in Toronto, and my clients are two individuals and a committee called the Committee on Economic and Monetary Reform. Sorry, Committee on Monetary and Economic Reform, COMER, COMER. They're the applicants, and it's taking place in Toronto, but it's been stuck almost in a sort of a tornado. It's spinning in a procedural quagmire because obviously the government does not want this thing going to trial. So there was a series of appeals on the on an initial motion to strike the whole thing, where we lost at the first level, we won at the second level, and then both sides appealed to the Federal Court of Appeal, and both appeals were dismissed. So essentially, it went back, and then there was another round of appeal. Sorry, a motion to strike, which was granted, which is now under appeal. We're going back to the Federal Court of Appeal. So it's been stuck in this procedural nightmare for about 4.5 years.
And
Because they're trying to
go ahead.
block it.
Okay, so there are these procedural wranglings, and previously we had a conservative government here in Canada. Now we have a liberal government here in Canada. It doesn't seem to matter, though, does it?
Well, no. Governments in North America aren't really governments as we historically have known them. They're like different football teams with different colored jerseys. The game is the same.
All right, so...
people are delusional if they think one government's going to effectively act different from another. In fact, when this current prime minister on the campaign trail was asked of what he thought about the Bank of Canada challenge, he turned to the cameras and, without knowing the first thing about it, simply said, "Oh, I don't believe in conspiracy theories." I don't know what that's supposed to have meant, but obviously he was not briefed on it. He doesn't understand it, and... I don't know how many members of his government understand it.
This is the current Canadian Prime Minister, the Liberal Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau.
Correct.
Whose father, Pierre Elliott Trudeau, was the one that essentially undermined the Bank of Canada Act by...
Yeah. And to his credit, though, he recognized that later in life. Too late at that. He was no longer Prime Minister, but he recognized that he made a huge mistake in doing that.
So you're essentially alleging that various finance ministers, starting with, in the early or to mid-1970s, the prime ministers, all the way up to the Queen of England, are essentially conspiring against the Canadian people, that this is an act of treason. Can I say that?
Well, some people have said that. I wouldn't go that far. It no longer involves the Queen of England in the sense that we patriated our Constitution in 1982. But essentially, yeah, they have relinquished sovereignty. They have handed off sovereignty to private individuals. Some people see that as a form of treason, but it's a very serious thing. We have a constitutional doctrine that says that the government cannot abdicate its duty to rule. So in that sense, they've handed over the country to private individuals. You know, in this day and age of globalization, that's not as shocking as it might have been 40, 50 years ago. It would have been unheard of 40 or 50 years ago, where people would be concerned. Now people seem to roll off through their, let it roll off their Facebooks and Twitter accounts. And, people are more interested in what's happening in cyberspace in the four to 6 inches in front of their face, not understanding the impact of this kind of policy. We're literally handing over the control of an entire country's monetary policy, which in turn affects economic activity and self-determination to private individuals who meet in secret and who are accountable to no one except their own profits.
Rocco, you mentioned this organization, COMER, C-O-M-E-R, and they approached you. Now, you're a constitutional lawyer here in Canada, trained in Osgoode Law School, a very prestigious law school. When they first came to you with this case, what did you make of it? Did you think that, do I really want to take this on? This is very conspiratorial. What were your feelings when they first approached you and said,
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, continue.
Well, when they first approached me, they had seen a few other lawyers who didn't know what to make of it and had heads or tails of it. As I started looking into it, I didn't know this was happening. I'm not a person who's not educated. And as I started looking into it, they said, "Is this something legally or constitutionally wrong with this picture?" I said, "Yeah." And as I moved into the case, and actually, I'll confess to you, it took me quite a long time to research the history and the economics and the legal framework of this, how this bank worked and how it fits into our current legal order, what the law is on the books now, and why they're not following it. As I did that, I realize it's probably the biggest case I've ever handled, and I've handled some pretty big cases in Canada.
For those, we're coming up on a break here, and I'll throw this question out, and we can address it after the break if you'd like. But for those listening, our American listeners and so forth, hearing this, they may be thinking, well, this is the Bank of Canada. What does this have to do with me? People in Europe thinking, what does this have to do with me? I'd like you to address that when we come back. Rocco Galati is a constitutional lawyer here in Canada, alleging that there is a conspiracy against the people of Canada. It involves the international bankers. Sound familiar? I think so. Back with more of our conversation right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. John Rappaport, investigative medical journalist from NoMoreFakeNews.com, will join us in hours 3 and 4 to talk about the Zika virus hoax. That's right, you heard me correctly. The Zika virus hoax. That's up and coming. Greg Bishop, our webmaster here at Coast to Coast AM, has posted some fascinating little tidbits up at the website, including this. You want to check this out. The six-year-old has put President Barack Obama's feet to the fire regarding the alien issue. That's just one of the stories you'll find there. Hey, I heard George Norrie the other night mention that membership for ParanormalDate.com now approaching, get this, 37,000 members. Think about that. If you're looking to make a special romantic connection online, why not give ParanormalDate.com a try? Remember, you're not alone. ParanormalDate.com. More of my conversation with Canadian constitutional lawyer Rocco Galati as we discuss the Bank of Canada conspiracy and what it means to you right here on Coast to Coast AM. Stay with us. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. Richard Serrett coming to you from Toronto and AM 640 Talk Radio, Coast's Toronto affiliate. Rocco Galati is with us discussing an interesting legal case that is playing out in Canada. He's filed an action in federal court to restore the use of the Bank of Canada to one of its original purposes, to provide interest-free loans to the federal, provincial, and municipal governments. Now, before the break, Rocco, I asked you, outside of Canada, to our American listeners and those around the world, why does this case matter when we're talking about central banks?
Well, it matters for the same reasons in every country, including third world countries, which we're slowly being drawn into. And that is its control over your own destiny, control over your own country, control over your own people. When your banking policies are handed over to foreign private interest in terms of decision making, you're no longer in control, particularly in a capitalist economy. What drives a capitalist economy, like everything else, is finances. You know, you can't have business without finances. And so your banking policies, your interest rate policies determine housing policies, on and on and on. And so it's part and parcel of the same movement we've seen since the end of the Second World War into a concentration of wealth by private individuals who bypass nation states and who bypass the constitution of various countries, including the United States of America and Canada, to govern in a way that's not accountable. While they govern, they're not accountable to us. And so you see this in the various trade deals that are now, you know, going through. And I've been involved in challenging trade deals since the late 90s, 1997, with a multilateral agreement on investment, and in 2001 with the FTAA, and soon we'll be challenging the CETA, the Canada-European Trade Accord, and the TPP, which is the Trans-Pacific Partnership. All these accords, what they do is they concentrate more and more power into the hands of private corporations, of private entities, who are not accountable to countries. And they set up their own dispute resolution process, which bypasses local courts in various countries. So the Supreme Court of Canada, the U.S. Supreme Court, is no longer determining these issues. It's an international tribunal outside the court system. And so what you're having, this is part and parcel of an evolving, unaccountable world government that's affecting our very lives every day and bypassing our laws and bypassing our constitutions. That's why it should matter to Americans just as much as Canadians. The only unique difference here is we can actually take a case because our bank is a public bank. So we can.
Except, as you pointed out, we have this Bank of Canada Act. Right now, today, the federal government could go to the Bank of Canada. We have in this country, the United States obviously has the same situation. We have a huge deficit in terms of infrastructure. Trillions of dollars needed to replace bridges, highways, water pipes, sewage pipes, etc. We can't afford to do that because we're in debt. But we could, at this moment, we could go to the federal, the Bank of Canada. We could borrow money interest free, and pay for those things, and not incur a single cent of debt, except. They refuse to do it. Is that correct?
That's correct. They refuse to do it, and there's no reason. They refuse to follow the law. And you could do that as easily in the United States as you can in Canada. In fact, North Dakota, the state of North Dakota, has had its own public central bank for state purposes since 1905. And they do this. And they've done it since 1905. And guess what? They've never had a deficit since 1905, is my understanding.
They borrow money interest-free
from
their bank.
Right. Now, what's interesting, and people should know, is guess what country today does the same thing in the world that people should realize? China.
China
has its own central bank. For its government expenditures, it just prints money, and then it takes in foreign currency to balance its economic power. But they don't free float their currency. They don't borrow money on the international markets to run their government. It'd be a disaster for them. They know that. India too has its own central bank. After the last collapse, Argentina created its own central bank after it told its money lenders to go take a hike. So Iceland as well recently after that fiasco created its own central bank.
Well, they had a virtual revolution. I mean, the citizens took control of the government. They sent their bankers to jail.
Not only that, now, if you're a private bank and want to lend money in Iceland, you have to lend 100% of your reserves. You can't create money out of thin air and lend money you don't have. You can only lend money you have. Here we have, in Canada, it's a 2% reserve. So for every $100 you deposit in the bank, the bank only actually has $2 on hand for you in case of a meltdown.
One of the arguments against this, Rocco, is that if we can borrow money interest-free from a central bank of Canada, that it would be inflationary. How do you counter that argument?
Well, it's so bogus. Here are the facts. Between 1937 and 1974, when we were doing this, the inflation rate was much lower than it has been since 74 to the present. Second of all, there's a built-in mechanism to avoid inflation, which is that you can't just lend the entire budget every year. It's up to a maximum of 30% for the federal government, 25% of the budget for the provincial government, and it has to be paid back in the next fiscal year, which is all doable because 30%, if you're actually using 30% of the budget for infrastructure, that's already a lot. And of course, there's always a third of the budget on hand to pay back every year, because the debt that we incur every year to private bankers tends to be about 9 or 10% of the annual budget. So if the annual budget, for instance, is $230 billion, the interest payments tend to be $23 billion. And they've been as high as $40 billion a year in Canada on a $280 billion budget. But, it's uncanny. It's almost, the deficit every year matches almost penny to penny the interest that we pay to the banks, This reminds me of the old opium wars in China, where the Western countries were forcing the Chinese to consume opium because it was part of their economy. We've been forced to become addicted to interest to foreign bankers.
Rocco Galati is with me and involved in a very interesting, to say the least, legal case that is playing out in Canada. He's filed an action in federal court to restore the use of the Bank of Canada to one of its original purposes, and that is to provide interest-free loans to the federal, municipal, provincial governments. Now, one of the individuals that is behind this case is no stranger to Coast AM, and that is the Honourable Paul Hellyer, Canada's former defense minister, former deputy prime minister. What is his involvement in this case?
Well, Mr. Hellyer is part of Comer. He's a committee member, has been for a long time, and he's also very involved and interested in these issues, and he's been advocating for, independent fiscal policy for decades, and he's actually got a set plan on how to achieve it. Obviously he's in a better position to set that out in terms of weaning ourselves off slowly, so to minimize the damage of getting off these international loans,
I know that this is it's at the federal level here, but explain what are the obstacles again in order for to get this case, for example, to the highest court, which would be the Supreme Court of Canada.
We're almost there on the first round in terms of federal court of appeal, but from the obstacles, if the blocks are still there, then this round we're going to go to the Supreme Court. The part of the problem, Richard, is that the courts tend to be a blunt instrument. They don't feel equipped to deal with these issues, which is silly because they deal with everything else. Historically, the court has dealt with all sorts of things, including Pierre Trudeau's price and wage controls in the mid-70s. But part of the problem is there's a judicial reluctance to actually step in and say, we're not the government. The government's the government. But this is not a policy issue. This is an issue of the government ignoring the law, the statute, and the Constitution, and allowing foreign private entities to control our banking policy, which in turn controls a lot of other things. So the obstacle really is in the... A lot of this obstacle is in the, one, obviously, in the resistance of the government that doesn't want to change it, and secondly, the courts themselves that don't feel equipped to deal with this kind of issue.
Are you doing this course, or are you taking this case on pro bono? I mean, who's paying for the legal costs?
Well, the legal costs are being paid by the committee. I'm not at liberty to get into the details, but no, I'm not doing this strictly pro bono. I'm not getting rich off this case. I'm not billing my top rates, but it's not strictly speaking pro bono.
And you consider this to be the most important case that you've ever presided over, is that right?
Yeah. I mean, it's huge in the sense that, the ramifications are huge. And the issues are huge. We're talking about, this is an instance where you can actually put the spotlight on how a government can actually give away the store, as it were, to private foreign entities. When you talk about globalization, when you talk about the other ways in which private corporations control the world, often people, criticize and say, well, they're just doing your business and making money, and but this is actually a very focused and indisputable example on how foreign private interests can actually take away your government's role in running its own country for its own people.
It seems to me then that under this scenario where they're ignoring, and I say they, the government du jour, ignoring the Bank of Canada Act, which would allow the citizens to go to the bank, borrow money interest-free to pay for, we have a huge, as I mentioned, infrastructure deficit. We have, for example, Aboriginals in this country who are, we're all aware of what's going on in Flint, Michigan. We have a huge problem with the lack of potable water, and with...
In Detroit, yeah.
yet reserves across this country. All this could be taken care of. We could borrow this money to get these things done, throw money at the problems, interest-free. But we are ignoring this Bank of Canada Act, going to international lenders, and essentially putting ourselves into huge debt. So it seems like the citizens then become chattel, almost like pieces of furniture.
Yeah, we're literally speaking, we're being enslaved. There's no two ways about it. You know, we're being enslaved to the equivalent of international, what do you call them, loan sharks.
And this is not just the, for example, you know, we have the Conservative government, which was recently defeated in an election here in Canada. Do you suspect that the Liberal government, the present Liberal government, will continue to fight against you in this court case?
I suspect they will. But what's interesting about it, Richard, is when we set out on this case, virtually nobody knew about the Bank of Canada and its purpose and its history. And in the course of the last 4 years, if you just Google Bank of Canada on the internet, this has gone, you know, many viral across. I get calls from all over the world all the time on this case because people are interested in the banking policy and the issues that it raises. During the election and now, especially now, although Trudeau's government is still fighting the case, it's interesting he has thrown a smokescreen announcing that he wants to set up a, quote, infrastructure bank, a bank to deal with infrastructure deficits in the country. Well, my answer to him is, you know, you already have one. It's called the Bank of Canada. But my only point is it's getting noticed, and they know that people are on to this issue, and so they're trying to placate it. Obviously, I haven't seen the details, but it probably will be a very, a very deceptive type of thing to placate people. It'll be what I call an aspartame placebo. But my point is that he's had to take notice because people are writing in, people are phoning in. They're saying, "Well, what's going on?" You know, because they're aware of the case now. They're aware of the issues, even though the government doesn't want to deal with them, because then they're dealing with the international bankers.
All right, and as you pointed out, when someone approached the newly minted Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, and this was widely seen on YouTube, when he was asked about this whole Bank of Canada fiasco, he said, "Well, I don't subscribe to conspiracy theories."
Right.
Are you getting interest from, for example, people in the United States, like a Rand Paul or others who have been talking about, you know, the need to audit the Fed, the Federal Reserve, that is? Are you getting interest from the United States?
Yeah, through, I don't know if people are familiar with Ellen Brown, who wrote the book The Web of Debt. She's been following her case very closely. She initially followed it very closely because she's been writing about this for years as well. And she cites the North Dakota experience and whatnot. But in terms of politicians, no. Now, I can't speak for the committee because I just handle a legal case, but I have not been approached by any American politicians, as it were.
Do you have the ear of anyone on Parliament Hill in Ottawa, Canada's capital? Are there any parliamentarians that are on board, or are they all sort of, quote, end quote, in on it, the conspiracy?
Well, I don't know if they're in on a conspiracy, but it breaks down as follows, Richard. A lot of them just don't know, but they pretend they know, and they say, "Oh, this is quack, and this is crazy. You know, our banking system's fine." Then there's the sector of members of parliament who know there's a problem, but because they don't have the wherewithal to actually debate it, because they're not in possession of how it works, and they're not in possession of the knowledge to intelligently debate the issue, avoid it because they don't want to seem stupid. And then there's a very few, you know, a smaller minority who know what's going on, but who either can't convince their party leaders to raise this as a major issue, or who are independent and minority parties. So it's different. The members of parliament break down into different classes for that.
What's kind of ironic about this is we don't even need a court to rule on this. We simply need the government du jour, whether it's the present Liberal government, to recognize an act of parliament that already exists, which is the Bank of Canada Act, correct?
That's correct. We don't need a court declaration. We have the law. We're going to court to say that they should be ordered to follow the law. The law is already on the books.
Fascinating. All right. Rocco Galati stays with us, constitutional lawyer. This is important. This has to do with central banks, not only here in Canada, a central bank owned by the people of Canada, but the repercussions really are worldwide. We'll come back and discuss further and take your phone calls. The Bank of Canada conspiracy right here on Coast to Coast AM. My name is Richard Serrett. Stay with us.